Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Event Innovator Show. Today is one of those shows that you will want to listen to all the way through. David Adler is probably one of the biggest heroes in the world of events in modern times. He started the magazine Biz Bash. He's got all kinds of writings. He's written books. He speaks on all kinds of topics. He's created events that most of us would dream about creating, but he's very thoughtful about what he does. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is the power of conversations, that events are designed to create conversations, not conversions. So take a listen to this. If you enjoy it, you want to get the article that I wrote about building community. Go to filmrichon.com/bonus and you can sign up for that, or just go to filmrichon.com and there's a link there. You can get on my email list where I send out periodic updates and fascinating things that are going on. But get that article. It's going to be very helpful. Here's this week's show. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Event Innovator Show. This is one of the episodes I've been looking forward to for a long time. David Adler is my guest. David started Biz Bash. He's into a new phase of his career. You could say he is a legend in the events industry, and he's been around it for a long time. So David, welcome to the show. I can't wait for this conversation.
Fantastic. I'm so happy to be here, Phil. I can't wait for the musical accompaniment.
Absolutely. Because Tell us about what you're doing now. You've moved into gathering.
Let me describe one thing, and I think that all of us have to take note of this. I went to speak a few years ago at IMEX, and Dahlia, you know our friend Dahlia?
Yes.
We're having our $50 hot dog, you know, getting ready at the concession stand there. She says, you know, have you ever heard of this thing called a perennial? And I said, yeah, I heard about it for flowers, but what the hell are you talking about? She said, oh, this is a completely new demographic that forget Gen X, forget Gen Z, forget boomers. A perennial is someone that blooms every season, that is curious about life, and it doesn't matter what demographic they're from. Because most people do not fit into their demographic category. I don't want to be playing, I'm 71 years old now. I don't want to be playing shuffleboard down in Miami Beach. I mean, I'm starting over again. I got a lot of stuff going on. And so I decided to start a new media company. My non-compete at BizBash is over, so I can do anything I want. And now I'm starting something called GatheringPoint.News, which is part media company, part newsletter, part broadcast, part whatever I think the media is today. Because the world is changing, and I want to sort of learn and build my intellectual capital so I know I can sort of use this to help other people become perennials. And have act threes and act fours and act fives. And so basically what this is, it's a behind-the-scenes look at the event industry, all the things that I've been thinking about doing over the last 50 years, and how to bring it back to other people's lives. So we're calling it culture, commerce, and connection come together, where the people who make it happen finally get their due, and where you're not here to compete with anyone. We're here to elevate everyone. So I am busy. I'm going to interview every magazine editor, every newsletter editor. I want to show the cadre of people that are the stars in our industry that are discussing it. I also want to make it a little gossipy, a little fun. I want to use music. I'm doing a lot of Suno music. I've already done musical book reviews. And so I'm trying to do all these things that are really interesting. I'm adding a thing called the prompt drop. So every couple of days, I'm putting a new prompt up for using it with AI and how to, like, I make hors d'oeuvres with AI, for example. I'm creating business plans for new media companies, new event companies with AI. So I'm trying to, like, do all my things. And with AI, I can really do things much more faster than I've ever done before.
Absolutely. Well, I can say I subscribe to your newsletter. And the reason I do is because I saw the kinds of things that you're writing about. I'm sure it's the things that you're curious about. It seems like you're doing deep research in order to write these. And in my opinion, the things that you're writing about are the things that event leaders need to be thinking about.
don't always have time to do our own research, but to do better and better events, we need to consider these things. And that's a good lead in to the conversation that we want to have today. One thing I've noticed since the pandemic, and someday that's going to be like, why do we say that anymore? But in recent years, the reason people are going to events has changed. It's shifted because information is prolific. You can get it anywhere. And as you mentioned, AI can even interpret it for you. So information is not that important anymore. People are going to events for transformation and connections. And I fear that we haven't adjusted events to allow for the transformation that people want or need or don't even realize that they need. And so I want to focus on that today. I've had lots of conversations about connections, and we know that's important. But transformation is, to me, it's a little bit of a black box. But I know you've thought about it a lot. So I'd love your introductory thoughts about that. And we're just going to have a conversation
Let me first give a little anecdotal thing about, you know what happens in our industry? Light bulbs go off. And all of a sudden we say, oh my God, that's right. And you get that in conversations on the trade show floor, in the hallways, when you go to the registration desk, when you're having a cocktail, when you're listening to a keynote, and it happens all the time. So it, like, how do you make these light goes off? So I was doing an event. I was voluntold to help my friend, Capricia Marshall, who became the chief of protocol of the United States. And the eighth floor of the State Department is a museum, and so it needed to be endowed. So we said, okay, we got to raise $20 million to endow the State Department so we can do anything we want. So we decided, okay, you know what would be fun? This was in the Hillary era. Why don't we do a conversation between Henry Kissinger and Hillary Clinton? And we can make that happen. So we did. So I was sitting in that room, and I heard Henry Kissinger say to Hillary, you know, Hillary, I can't do the Kissinger accent, but, you know, every single day you're drinking from a fire hose as the Secretary of State, and you're just spending your intellectual capital. And so what you need to do is people need to take the time to build their intellectual capital. And how do they build their intellectual capital? They go to events. They go to take courses. And so he said that I go and I study and I talk to people to build my intellectual capital so I can spend it when I'm drinking from the fire hose. And it was a light bulb. But it's all about the neuroscience of this stuff. And so I've been studying all the different biological things that we go through about it. And you were mentioning earlier before we got on about music and how you talk about your jazz thing, and then I'll go into my dopamine thing.
Yeah, well, first of all, before I did something very radical at an event, this lady who is speaking about neuroscience laid out how different frequencies can affect our bodies. So G4, which is above middle C, when it's played, will cause us to calm and feel secure. The A flat that's right above it predisposes us to change. So keep those two notes in mind. So I did something. I saw this quote where some university studied jazz musicians, which I'm a jazz saxophonist, and they had them lie down on a couch and play their instrument, and they put nodes on their brain to see map what was going on while they were being creative, while they were doing different things. And I thought, well, that's really fascinating. I would love to see the results of that study, number one. But it planted a seed in my mind. I was getting ready to speak a couple hours later, and I thought, I wonder if I did that. Would that be unforgettable? And I thought, oh, it definitely would. It could be really bad because I've never tried this before. But I did it, and people applauded, and I know they will never forget that moment because no one's ever done that I know of in a keynote before. So that's an entree into you talking about what's really going on in the brain as we do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not a scientist, and so I can't even pronounce the words, but I did a little cheat sheet to get ready for this. And the first one is that it's called the dopamine loop. Anticipation is everything. Oh my God. You know, what are you going to see? Oh my God. You know, and it comes down to expressions. And the science is that dopamine spikes more in anticipation of reward than in receiving it. Mm. And that the event tactic would be things like tease surprises, build suspense, release partial reveals. And think mystery speaker, intros, blackout reveals, dramatic room turnarounds. And an example is something like send in an unlockable welcome packet or use digital boarding passes with countdowns, things like that. And it builds the anticipation, and it sort of uses the brain in the dopamine loop to keep saying, oh my God, oh my God. Dopamine is like one of the most incredible things to understand because you'll see it coming up in almost everything. There's another thing called the cognitive load theory, that simplicity equals retention. So you have to be as simple as possible. We don't absorb things that well. So you have to not overwhelm. So avoid overwhelming signage, for example. When you see a million things on a sign, oh my God, you don't want to go there. Overstuffed agendas. You want to go to back-to-back panels. You need time to breathe. And we're seeing this in all the event agendas. And other people are studying this really well. So you have to use things like curate micro moments, bold visuals, and singular themes. I love doing, when I do my presentations, one word. I mean, those kind of things. Now, I'm sure you agree with all of this. You're nodding in total agreement.
Absolutely. I think simplicity is really important, and it's counterintuitive. Smart people like us and people who have written books and done a lot of study, we want to share everything that we know. And when we do that, that's the proverbial fire hose that you're talking about. Yep. And it feels wrong to break it down and just give one or two nuggets. The speaker I heard yesterday was talking about the rule of four plus or minus two, that's like how much we can retain. We can't actually remember 7-digit numbers, let alone 10-digit numbers. And I was commenting about this website that had 11 services that they offer. I have no idea what they are except for one, and because it's too many. Yep. So when you're giving a presentation, I think your idea of just giving one thing at a time, avoiding that cognitive overload, is super important. Can you remind me, what's the part of the brain that sends us into fight or flight?
I'm going to get to that. But it's interesting. I always also talk about the forgetting curve. Because you have to, one of the things that we can do at events, I believe, is reinforce the forgetting curve. Like, as soon as a presentation is over, you send for 5 days, you send, hey, remember this? Hey, remember that? Hey, remember this? And it actually can be sponsorable.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's very true. Yeah.
So the next one is actually what we're talking about, the amygdala hijack. It's the amygdala is the thing. It's how fear kills flow. So the science is that unexpected stress triggers fight or flight. It's nearly impossible to stay present when you're doing that because, oh my God, you hear something going on, you hear a pop in the back of the room. So you have to de-risk the experience with smooth arrivals, clear signage, supportive facilitation, and inclusive design. And so you have to use emotional PPE. Calm tone, welcoming rituals, visible helpers. Like, you got that down, because especially with music, it's a way of helping people in that area.
It's interesting because I think there's deliberate moments where you can use that amygdala. What do you call it?
The amygdala.
Yeah. So I think there's a way to use fight or flight to your advantage, because one of the benefits of it is when you're in that alert state, if you can make someone realize, oh, I'm not in danger, my brain's now awake. Mm-hmm. I'm paying attention. And so I can actually learn better if they're not actually in danger. So a few years ago, Mark Schaefer was speaking and we had these confetti guns that went off, which most people absolutely loved, unless you had PTSD. Those people forgot everything that happened after that moment because they're wondering, is there someone with an active gun in the room? Is there something else going on? They were in that mode of, do I need to get out of here? So I think we do have to be aware of how
we're those chemists. We're basically chemists. I mean, we're mixing and matching all these. Like, I had I forgot his name. He did an incredible presentation on the sounds of different neuroscience things. Like in sports, everything is built on the ah. And he was able to take all the 12 sounds and create this dozen of things that were just it. And it for me, I learned that way. I learned by people that know how to. If I had to read a textbook on this, my mind would glaze over. I don't know if you're a musician, so you're like your brain works in different ways than other people's brains, probably.
Yeah, I love getting little bit of sound bites, like, you know, the continual learning. Yesterday at this event, I learned a ton of different things, some of which I will retain, most of which I will forget just because of the natural forgetfulness that we have. I was going to say, though, back to that point real quick, is I think MCs can play a critical role in helping people, helping reinforce things that people learn, whether it's just giving them space to say, what's one thing that you're going to keep from what you just heard? Because as soon as you make that decision, you're more likely to remember it. And then if you actually ask them at the end of the day, what are three things that you're going to take away from today? Now you've got two touches after the fact. And then if you repeat those stories to someone tomorrow and make that commitment, now all of a sudden it's part of your short-term memory, but you're beginning to move it to long-term memory. Right. And I think most of us don't do that. We move on.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think that is the new frontier of events is the respect of what I call them collaboration artists. I even put it in my book, collaboration artists, because facilitators are the least respected, not respected. They should be superstars. Those MCs that know how to manage a room, that know how to get people to talk to whether using neuroscience, using their charisma, and using techniques that have been proven are the future. Because what the worst thing is when you go to an event and nothing happens. We talked a little bit about this. It's a complete waste of time. But if you have someone that knows how to architect the room, architect the event, you know, that's why I think all the work that we're doing now on designing our pathways and our journeys are important. But it all has to be sort of mixed together. So it's really interesting. One of the other ones I think is really important is called mirror neurons. Why group energy is contagious. And that to me is we subconsciously mimic others and emotions and behaviors. Like whenever you decide to do a group discussion, for example, and I talk to one person and I go around the table, everyone is busy trying to mirror each other. So it gets more intense and more intense as you go on. I do these things called Jeffersonian dinner parties where I actually, I ask the first question that I use is, what was your first job and what did you learn from it? And by the fourth person, all of a sudden they're digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And at every one of these, somebody actually cries. It brings out the emotion. And the contagious energy is so important. I mean, so one of the event tactics is seed super participants or energy ambassadors in the room. So don't just sort of leave it to chance. But if you see somebody that's contagious, you're going to follow their thing. Their joy is infectious. And you use light and music and physical movement to amplify these collective emotions, especially when it's choreographed. So this is not exactly something that you can leave just to yourself. And it can be used for good purposes and bad purposes. So you got to be very careful on how you do this stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking about the MCs, and they obviously can reflect that kind of energy. But there's another group of people that I find a lot of times are the wrong people. And I'll give you an anecdote. Last weekend, I went to a golf tournament called the Wichita Open, and there were a lot of volunteers at this place. Some of them were glad to be there. Others felt like they were bouncers at a club, had a frown on their face, and wanted to make sure you were supposed to be there. And so it didn't encourage me to want to talk to people when I'm feeling like, oh, I may be in the wrong place. So at events, the people that are at the door, whether it's the first door or the keynote door, they should be infecting you with smiles and energy. Glad you're here because you're going to be more inclined to participate. If they are dour, you're not going to probably turn to your neighbor and say anything. And I think those are small little signals, but a smile does a lot for people. What do you think?
It absolutely. I mean, we had at one of our BizBash shows, we hired professional huggers.
I love it.
And they hugged. And then the other thing, I'm actually working on my new gatheringpoint.news. I'm starting something called satirical swag. So I'm doing this thing where you sell the swag, but there's a musical thing behind it. So one of the hats that I'm going to have is called Professional Smiler. And there's a song about being a professional smiler. And then another one I have is End Event Abuse, Event Assistant Abuse. And there's a great song about that. Because it, I think that this song, what you're saying about music, is unbelievably so powerful. In fact, at every trade show that I am the MC at, I always have live band. Yeah. Because whether it's just for introductions or just for being Johnny Carson or Jay Leno or whatever the right, you know, the modern person that's doing those things, it is unbelievable how having live music is totally about the brain.
So you and I are on the same page there. I always have live music as well. Most shows I know of don't.
Yeah, no, it's
too expensive. Maybe playlists. They might have a DJ.
Yeah.
So what's your theory, though? What's going on with live music that doesn't go on?
It's all about the neuroscience. It's hitting the dopamine. It's hitting all of the chemicals. And live, you know, I've seen a lot. Some of the best ones I've had is where they have a DJ and one live musician. So it's not exactly – so you have a saxophone playing with the DJ.
Right.
And it does the same thing, or a drummer. But it does the same thing. It makes you feel – I mean, I say that we're not in the event business, that we're in the goosebump business.
Yeah.
And that whatever you can do to have people – you know, we're going back to the Maya Angelou quote as well. But you can say the Maya Angelou quote a million times, but you have to actually actualize it. Am I working? Is this broken? Shoot. I think I dropped you. Damn. I don't know what happened.
All good.
It just
will just start where we were. Which last?
Yeah, well, just stopped. I live next to the Russian embassy, so maybe there's something going on.
Oh, very good. The last thing I heard you say is we're in the goosebump business.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's enough to get you going again, or if we need to back up a little further.
Let's see. I'll just start with. As I just mentioned, we're in the goosebump business. Like I think that it's not enough to just quote Maya Angelou, that the people actually have to do it at events. They have to do things. And using neuroscience and music and charisma and energy, you know, upping and down the energy, the lights, you know, comfortable seating. I mean, it's all the accoutrements of gathering. And so it's we are both probably exactly on the same page because we're nodding at the same pace.
Yeah, and so I think something's interesting here because I've heard Andy Sharp with Song Division. He and I had a conversation a couple of years ago about the progression that goes from random music to cultivated or curated playlist to DJs. To live musicians, to live participatory music, which is what Song Division specializes in, which once you are feeling like you're engaged in the music, whether that's just a simple call response with the audience or dividing into sections where you're doing something, or as Song Division does, of hey, having audience members actually write the music that's going to be sung, then, you know, I think there's a level that happens there that is extra level. And so I think part of this transformation is we've got to move people from being passive participants to active participants in the event. And some of the things that you're talking about are ways to do it. The brain's got to feel safe to do it. It's got to be activated to do it. You need to see what it looks like, the mirroring of neurons that you're talking about. I don't know if you have any responses or if there's other elements of the neuroscience that you want to go into.
There's the new thing that I found, and I don't know if I can share this with you, but I did a book review for Tahira in music, and I'm doing in my we're doing book reviews in music. There is everyone should really go to suno.com, S-U-N-O. I don't know if you've been on it, Phil, but it is a way of, I think we're in the era of personalized music. And as you get better at it, I've done 150 songs for my collection of, I have these pictures that you may see over here, and I've turned all of them to music. And it's unbelievable when you say, you're right, I'm writing a song about Phil. They pay attention. And so I'm doing songs about events. I'm doing songs about I have one coming up on the, that I did also on gatheringpoint.news on SEMA's 35th anniversary. And I created a song for them. And I'm doing that for events. And I think that people should be doing it at their events, because now we're in the era of personalization of song. That's a really good thing. Now, let me, should I move it's on funny, to? Go ahead.
Well, I want to just comment really quick, because I think that's an interesting thing. 20 plus years ago, I wanted to start a business all about writing personalized songs. There's not a business in that for me anymore because of things like Suno. I would have to, I could still write, there are people out there that can write customized songs that will be different because of the lyrics and the tone and those kinds of things, but it's harder.
It's harder.
It's usually good enough what music, you're doing.
Musical people hate Suno. They hate Suno. Because they say they hate it, but as an event producer, and every time, you know, it gets better every week because they're adding more things to it. And all my, you know, you got the naysayers are all of a sudden saying, "Holy crap, that's you know, it's okay for this." I mean, it's not like you may not be doing an operetta, or you may not be doing, but it gives you the tools to do some of the stuff yourself that you can never do.
Our MC wrote his personalized walk-on music because he gave it the lyrics and said the style that he wanted, and nobody in the room would have known that he did that through technology.
Yeah, so, no, it's crazy.
Go ahead and move on to the next.
Okay, let's move on. The next one is the social brain. This is what we were talking about earlier. Connections trump content. The human brain is wired for connections for connections than information. Event tactic. Design your events for conversations, not just consumption. Enable meaningful interactions, whether structured like World Cafe or Jeffersonian dinner parties, or spontaneous. Conversation concierges, icebreakers, bars, intros, keynotes. You know, use what I do for an event is whenever I speak, I say, hey, it's not about me. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I want you to talk to each other. So I say, to the group, it's the next 5 minutes, you're going to talk to each other. You're going to ask them. I say that the most powerful word in the English language is the word let's. Because every time people get together, they say, let's go to lunch. Let's go to dinner. Let's hook up. Let's start a revolution. I want to get you to get to that point. And I judge an event not by how many people attend now, but how many conversations I curate. And it's those connections that are much more valuable than the information on the screen. Because I can go in AI and get anything I want now. I can't meet Phil.
Absolutely.
Sit next to him and say, oh my God, we connect. And there's goosebumps that happen between us because we're relating to each other. And to me, that's the value of face-to-face as well.
Absolutely. Priya Parker in her book talks about the kinds of questions that you ask. That open up transparency. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, I did the first interview with Priya when her book came out, and I think I'm a huge fan. And I mean, I don't remember exactly her questions. Do you remember her questions? I don't remember them, but I should, and I'm going to make sure that I understand.
Forget exactly. Them. It was something like, tell us about a moment where you failed, or tell us about a moment where you overcame a fear, something that was a little bit vulnerable. But what she said is by the time they got all the way around the circle, people were crying.
Well, that's what I do with my Jeffersonian book parties. The other great one that I use, the other question that I use, you're reminding me, is not only what was your first job and what did you learn from it? It's who is your favorite teacher and why? And all of a sudden, we're down to the third, you know, everyone, by the third person, it's always, oh, my third grade teacher. And she thought of me as a human being. And I, you know, she was the first person that thought of me as not just a child. It's another thing.
So I know exactly who I'd say, but I'm going to cry.
Oh, tell me.
Oh, it's Mr. Sandler.
Why?
He allowed me to grade myself. Well, first of all, he caused me to be in love with The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So he read The Hobbit in class. Didn't even know about the Lord of the Rings yet, but a few summers later I read it. But yeah, he allowed us to grade ourselves and be honest with what we're good at and what we're not. And then he affirmed it or changed our view on something. And that was a moment of feeling seen.
And what impacts you about that today?
So I gave myself a C in writing. Now, at the time, I thought it was about penmanship, not actual writing, but I didn't really enjoy writing all the way through high school, even into college. And it took another person, another teacher, who unlocked my brain to realize, oh, I can write. I just can't follow all those stinking rules. But I still wouldn't have thought that I'd write a book. So for me, it's actually a negative anchor that happened because he gave me permission to look at myself. But it was wrong, but it took a long time for it to come out. But I feel like if he hadn't done that, I probably would have just coasted through and never discovered, because I think sometimes that a negative emotion allows us to unlock something else.
I mean, it's amazing those early years, because that probably was in your head as one of your stumbling blocks too for many years. So, that's why these questions are so incredibly powerful, and getting to know how you're thinking about it makes me think about, oh, I remember Mrs. Heckman in fifth grade, and she made me feel like, you know, we had the John F. Kennedy assassination in fifth grade at 2:30 before I went out on my patrol post, and I came back, and there was this the whole world changed. I mean,
wow.
It's interesting hearing people's perspectives as young people, because one of the other things that I think is important in all of our discussions is, how do you democratize a room? How do you create the common bonds? And usually, if you're under 20 or whatever, it's easier to talk about it. So it's really interesting. And when you hear everyone's story, you just want to hug everybody.
All right, let's go back to the professional huggers.
Here's another next rule. It's called the peak end rule. Memory is not linear. Remember, peaks and endings, not the middle. Event tactic is bookend with intention. Most professional, powerful emotional moments should be one early and final. Use the end to call to action, moments of awe or of ritual belonging, not just gift bags.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the moments that we as event organizers forget to put a lot of focus on. We do pretty well with the first impression. And I think some one or two peak moments in between actually do matter. People remember those things, but they're probably going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
So I think focusing on that ending moment and making it really special is something I've not done very well very many times, because it, you know, usually run out of time or you run out of budget.
I mean, it's intention, and a lot of people are doing at the end of the event when people leave, have a bigger, you know, we do this sort of Instagram moment when you come in. It's the Instagram moment when you leave. It's more important. Here's the next one is oxytocin effect. Trust is a chemical. Oxytocin is released during emotional bonding and touch. The event tactic would be create safe, vulnerable storytelling, shared meals, eye contact like we do, meaningful give and takes, use story circles, facilitated kind of the things we were talking about before. But then it releases oxytocin. And oxytocin is the chemical that people think about that bond mothers and children. But it doesn't. It bonds everything. And so we got to release the oxytocin. And you do that by feeling. It's kind of, this is the Maya Angelou quote in reality. It's very important. The next one is sensory priming. Multisensory inputs equal sticky moments. So we are more, we store richer memories when multiple senses are engaged. So the event tactic is designed for sound, scent, taste, texture, and not visual, not just visual. Event people understand this intuitively, but like if you use diffuse scents at entry, serve unexpected flavors, offer tactile activities like voting walls and creative stations, this is where you're going to, like, it's going to click into your head. It's what you said earlier about the in-between moments that make sense.
Yeah, multisensory is so important. But I want to go back for a second to oxytocin, because yes. I think that's the earlier you can get that engaged, the more closely people will feel bonded and more safe they're going to feel. They'll just continue to deepen. So if that theory is true, which you're shaking your head, so I think absolutely, you think it's true, what could we do? What can we do to stimulate that as people are arriving or within the first few minutes to help them feel that bond that can only grow through the event?
Well, the one thing you do is have very friendly people. We were talking earlier. And, you know, that's why a lot of restaurants and hospitality businesses they engage the people right away. Even the things like, how is your day, if you do it authentically, is a good thing. Tell me, and then sort of joke around with the person and make them feel like they're part of the thing. Because the number one, David Allison, I know you know him, talks about the number one value that people respect and want is belonging. Yes. So the minute you feel belonging, you get the oxytocin effect. That's what the mom does with the kid. I mean, it's all about that.
Yeah, I put a lady at the top of the escalator who I know is going to look in the eyes of everyone and either give them a physical hug or a verbal hug if they aren't interested in that, because I know she's going to make them feel welcome. She's like this mother who's going to say, you belong here. And she's only been to the event one other time, mm-hmm. but I saw that in her. I said, you received that. I want you to give that away to 2,000 people.
That's right.
Well, and she did it.
You know? You know what you're saying here is that we thought for years that all this stuff was trivial. It turns out this is more important than anything. So to me, that, you know, we had it all wrong for years. And that we were doing it. We just didn't know we were doing it. And also, event organizers didn't think of themselves in a high level. And so I think now you're seeing more and more people that take this so seriously. One of the other ones that is called neural synchrony. Yep. Why collective awe works. And this is really an interesting group experiences of awe synchronizes heart rates and brain waves. So event tactic is plan moments of shared astonishment, live music, dramatic light, and large scale reveals and surprising choreography. It's what happens when that song, you know, it's what you do every day in terms of what music does. It's not showy. It's a biological unity is what you're creating. So it's a very smart tactic.
We had a beatboxer at our most recent event, and he created that moment, but I didn't know he was going to. I just thought it was going to be cool. It was something different, you know, than what we've done before. But the audience was transfixed for 5 minutes. And I've never seen this end of it. It was a spontaneous ovation. No one had to ask for it.
Well,
I'm just so gifted.
Yeah.
Their jaws were dropping. And then the speaker who got up after that, she's like, I want him coming with me every time I give a keynote, because what better preparation than awe before I come up, right?
You know, you're making me think I'm going to write an article for Gathering Point News on the impact of applause. What does it mean? Mm. And what's the neuroscience of applause? Because that, it's such an ancient tradition. I mean, why do we just clap our hands? It seems so, when you think about it, it seems so basic, primal.
But it's when it's forced, then it doesn't have an effect.
Yeah, that's true.
Yesterday I did something really funny. You know John Batiste, right?
Oh, yeah.
I told a story. He performed at NAMM this year, and he was out in the audience for, I don't know, 10 minutes. I've never seen anything like the concert he did. It was an experience, is the way I describe it. It wasn't a concert. But he walked right past me with his whole band doing that New Orleans line, whatever they call that, second line, I think it is. And so I told the story of how powerful that was to me. And I said, I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm going to do it. So I took my horn and I walked off the stage. This is at the end of my keynote. And then I just walked through playing "O Win the Saints." And I asked them if they would clap with me. This, I didn't do this on purpose, but I did it for, you know, several minutes. Then at the end, I just stopped and I played. And when I was done, what did I have? I had an ovation because I already got them engaged with me, but they were doing it voluntarily. This wasn't a moment that they're like reluctantly doing it. They were with me. And I mean, I'm going to try to do that every time I do a keynote.
Yeah, it sounds like you're improvising every day. I mean,
I do. I improvise every day and I love it. But I think getting them, again, involved, engaged, participating, you know, that got them elevated for what was going to happen the rest of the day.
Yep. The last one. Here's the last one. Thank God. Clap, clap, clap. Default mode. The default mode network. Mind wanders for meaning. The mind wanders for meaning. So the idea is that when not actively engaged, the brain daydreams and makes emotional sense of things. Event tactic, build in white space, let attendees process, use walking meetings, contemplative lounges, guided journaling, or just quiet moments, but post-session, but make it so that you're giving people permission to do this. Because when a lot of people, just the mind goes away, but this is a way for the mind to wander in a way that makes sense. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, all these tactics are really, I mean, this article that I did, I learned so much by doing it and now talking about it with you that it's just making it so that it's getting deeper and deeper every time I discuss it. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm thinking with that last one of two different people. Are you familiar with Duncan Wardle?
Oh, yeah, very much. Yeah.
Okay, so when he does events, he's always handing out blank sheets of paper and getting people to participate and write down ideas and stimulate things. But then Jeff Hurt, when he is with Velvet, or used to be.
I don't know where he is now. I love Jeff.
But he ended this event that is actually SEMA. You talked about SEMA. He ended the entire event with an exercise of drawing a picture of what we learned.
Oh, that's great.
It was powerful because normally we write words down, we create lists, we do linear things. And he gave us an ability to tap into emotion and creativity that cemented things. And then I had to hand the picture to someone and get them to tell me if the story and find out if it was right.
Oh, wow.
That's like engages a whole nother thing. And then
vulnerability, courage.
Yeah. And I'm a terrible drawer. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All your insecurities come out.
Right. So I love that white space and just giving a chance to do something different with ideas because things connected by doing that, which is super powerful.
Yeah, we have so many incredible people in our industry that are doing so many incredible things. By not talking to each other, it's a waste. I mean, we're wasting all this intellectual capital that because it's easy to sort of just take stuff and use it. I've stolen tons of things from people all the time because it's the way we share.
One of my grad school professors called it R&D, rob and duplicate.
Rob
and duplicate.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Well, this has been fantastic. The way I always end the show is with my signature sign off, which is what's involved there is I'm going to ask you for three words that stand out from our conversation and I will play a response. And then we'll close out with you telling everybody how to find you and all the things. Okay. So give me three words that stand out from our conversation. If you can, at least one of them should be emotional.
Well, what I love is the word collective awe.
Yes.
That's definitely two words. And I love the concept with this oxytocin that trust is a chemical. That's two.
Yep.
And then the first one I would say connection trumps content.
All right. Collective awe, trust is a chemical, and connection trumps content. Thank you.
That's great.
All right.
That was fabulous.
David, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find your newsletter and follow you? What's your favorite places to send people?
GatheringPoint.news. Subscribe to both of our newsletters and our stuff. And also David at GatheringPoint.news is how you can get in touch with me, but .news, not .com. And I am sort of in it. I want to listen. Number one skill I want to do better at.
Well, again, folks, follow David on there. Subscribe because the insights are worth it. I forget how much it is a month, but it's totally worth it because he's doing deep research. As you just heard, he gave you some content from just one of the articles, but he's doing that constantly, and he's giving us such a big gift that the world needs. And I'm sure someday you're going to compile it all into books because that's what you do. But thank you for the research you're doing. Thank you for the thoughts you've shared today. This conversation is, I've certainly learned from it. I can't wait to dig back into some of your tips. And folks, I hope you found it the same way.
Can I have one more? Can I make one more statement?
Please, one more.
Okay, this is the last one. This has nothing to do with me, but I'm in something called the Lucky Sperm Club. And my father was a novelist who wrote 50 novels and 100 short stories. And on August 29th, they're re-releasing the remake of the movie he made in 1989 called The War of the Roses, which is now going to be called The Roses, with Benedict Cumberbatch, Olivia Colman, Kate McKenna, Andy Sanborn, and Elizabeth and Janning from The West Wing. And it's going to probably be one of the best movies of the year. So I encourage people to go to the movie theater on August 29th. It's my family's legacy.
You've got so much going for you. I can't wait to watch that. I can't wait to see your next articles that are coming up. Thank you again for being on the show, David. I look forward to the next time I see you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.